Welcome to Puro Politics, the political podcast of the San Antonio Express News. My name is Gilbert Garcia, opinion writer and columnist, and I'm joined by
Nancy Prayer Johnson, deputy editorial board editor.
And I'm sure all of you, like we have been following the judicial whiplash surrounding SB4, the Texas state law, which was passed by the state legislature during a special session in November, signed into law in December by Governor Greg Abbott in the border town of Brownsville. And this law will allow state and local law enforcement in Texas to arrest people who they believe entered the state of Texas illegally from Mexico. It will allow, the illegal entry would carry a sentence of up to 6 months. Judges would have the power to demand that the people suspected of crossing illegally, they would be able to demand that they be deported to Mexico. And if they didn't comply, they could face a sentence of up for 2 to 20 years. And so there are legal challenges, including from the Justice Department. Last week, we had a district court impose a temporary injunction. Last week, we had a period of a few hours when the law was in effect. And then I think the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ultimately decided to reinstate that injunction. So we're kind of in limbo with that. And we've been, like so many people in the state, been trying to make sense of it. Law has gotten national attention. And so first person I thought of to try to help us make sense of it is Al Kaufman, who is a professor of law at St. Mary's University School of Law. And he's the former senior litigating attorney for the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. Al, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's an important topic, and I enjoy discussing it and trying to make it clear if I can.
Yeah, I guess the fundamental issue here, and one that's it's being debated right now, is the question of who has the jurisdiction, who has the authority when it comes to immigration. We've always defined this as a federal responsibility. And I guess my question for you would be, does SB4 constitute an unconstitutional encroachment by the state of Texas into what has always been federal law?
Well, it is. It's an unconstitutional encroachment, to use your term. The state's getting into matters that are federal matters, and the U.S. Supreme Court decided that and has just basically been consistent about it for about 100 years, that immigration is a federal issue. The Constitution gives that authority to the legislature, to the Congress, to decide. The president has some powers, but basically doesn't allocate anything to the state. So this is a case where the state is trying to impose itself on what is clearly a federal matter.
And people have compared it to the Arizona law, the SB 1070 law, which was passed in 2010, and the Supreme Court dealt with it in 2012. And I think throughout the major part of it, which was the part of that law that allowed local law enforcement to arrest people who were in the country illegally. What do you see as the differences or the similarities between SB4 and SB 1070, and any sense about what the Supreme Court would decide in this case?
Well, SB 70 was the Arizona law, as you said, passed in about 2010, and it's very similar to the Texas law here. Yeah. It basically was a political matter in Arizona where there are strong anti-immigrant feelings, and they decided to pass a law to make things illegal that were not illegal under federal law. But the Supreme Court opinion called U.S. versus Arizona is the name of the case, was very strong and said these are federal matters that federal law controls. The fancy legal term they use is preemption, that federal law preempts state law getting involved. And in this case, in the Texas case, they're trying to distinguish the Texas case from Arizona, but they won't be able to do it. It's basically the same type of law. And the Supreme Court held in 2012 that these are federal matters and that the state law interfered with federal enforcement of immigration law.
When you talk about Texas trying to distinguish itself from Arizona law, I mean, from what you've seen, how has Texas tried to I guess in the writing of the law and the way the sort of narrative that has followed the.
Well, I try to describe. I always have trouble describing arguments of people I disagree with. But nevertheless, in this case, Texas is trying to say that all that the Texas law does is to follow federal law and just to give local officials the authority to arrest for what would normally just be violations of federal law. And their argument, the state Texas's argument, is that the Arizona law went further. It tried to make things illegal that were not illegal under federal law, and that's the difference. But that's not what the Supreme Court said. The Supreme Court said that states cannot interfere here, that the federal government has what they call occupied the field. They've written so many laws, so many regulations around this that that must control, and that states can interfere with that federal enforcement, whether they're along with the federal law or distinguishing themselves or making things illegal that the federal law does not make illegal. All of those things are inconsistent with the structure of the Constitution. And Judge Ezra wrote an opinion, a very lengthy, detailed opinion, finding just that, was that the Texas law was preempted by federal law.
The Arizona law, a lot of people refer to it as the show me your papers law. I think some people have applied that name to SB4 as well. And my understanding of the Supreme Court decision was it did not prevent law enforcement from asking people for their papers, but they couldn't arrest anyone.
That's right. Well, the only thing they allowed in Arizona was that if someone was otherwise arrested, they could ask them questions about their papers. They couldn't arrest them for that reason.
Yeah.
But also that Arizona tried to make things illegal that were not illegal under federal law. Arizona tried to say that if someone tries to get a job when they're undocumented, that violates the law. And that's not what the federal law does. The federal law makes it illegal for employers to employ undocumented persons, but not for undocumented persons to try to get a job. Mm-hmm. And the Arizona law made it illegal not to carry your papers. It was a separate Arizona law violation, mm-hmm. and that's not what the federal law held. But in Texas, basically, they're doing the same sort of thing. They're going to give these local state officials, every peace officer in Texas, every magistrate in Texas is going to have the authority to implement immigration law, which is not their business. And to be honest, they don't know much about it. I mean, state police officers, state judges don't understand the fine points of federal law. I've worked with immigration law off and on for 50 years, yeah. and I don't understand it.
Yeah.
It's very complicated. It takes specialization. And to foist this on a local police officer or even on a DPS officer or on a judge just makes no sense.
Do you think this can lead to more abuse or, you know, do you think that some jurisdictions that they won't put this to work, and then some will, and a little bit too much? Or what do you think the fallout
will
be?
Well, I think it's going to depend a lot on your local law enforcement. Some local law enforcement officials will be real gung-ho about this, mm-hmm. and they will see it as an excuse to stop anyone who they think looks like an undocumented person mm-hmm. to ask them questions. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to happen, and that has happened all over the country. So depending on your local police chief or your local DA, they're going to enforce this in different ways in different places.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difficulty of it. I worked on a case like this, and a lot of this is not new. I worked on a case like this in the Panhandle of Texas back in 1980s. Mm-hmm. And DPS officers would find somebody walking along the road who looked like, you know, they weren't a citizen. They'd stop them and ask them if they're a citizen. If they didn't say yes, they were, they couldn't speak in English, they'd arrest them and bring them to the local jail.
Okay.
So we stopped that. We actually sued one, and DPS had to stop doing that because they had no authority to do it. Now, if some of them would try to cover it up, and that's what I'm worried about happening in Texas as well.
How would they do that?
Well, stop somebody for changing lanes without using your signal or not having an inspection sticker. Mm-hmm. Are not paying attention. And if you stop them for that, then ask other questions. But in the Panhandle, they didn't even hide it. They arrested people for being undocumented.
Yeah.
And just one little story. I'm sorry to tell you, this is interesting. They would bring people into jails. We found a county in the Panhandle that whenever you're arrested, police officer brings somebody to the jail, they have to say the reason for holding them. And they would put in there, the reason for holding them was wet. And for those of you who don't understand that terminology, yes. That's, of course, totally the English translation of Mojado.
Yeah.
And basically, they're arguing that was their violations, that they were undocumented. And that was in the jail book.
And they would write that down.
And they would write that down. That was the charge. They didn't even say, a bad inspection sticker or left
didn't even try to cover.
Didn't try to cover it up.
Wow.
But that's a great concern. And one concern I think for the whole Latino community is going to be it's going to be an open season that if they see someone
profiling,
looks Mexican American or looks Mexican origin or not just Mexican, any sort of Hispanic origin, they're going to stop them to ask them questions. And that's I think, a real concern that the community has about Senate Bill 4.
I mean, we were talking about the practical effects because there's the constitutional issue and federal responsibility versus state. But then there are the practical effects of this. And one being that unless a state or local law enforcement person sees somebody crossing from Mexico into Texas, how would they have it? They would have no idea. And so it seems to me that it's going to be purely based on just looking at someone, passing by someone and thinking that person could be.
If the three of us were in a car, us too, Gilbert and I, would get stopped, but you wouldn't.
That's right.
It's inherent. It's racist. There's no other word for it.
That's the concern. But it's a little bit more than just, you're right. Theoretically, an officer can only arrest someone for a misdemeanor that happens in their presence, that they've seen. So literally they have to see someone come across the river, not to go through an inspection station and come across. But in fact, when they stop people later, they can ask them, how'd you get here? Well, I crossed over an Eagle Pass. Did you go through inspection? No. And then they have knowledge. They have probable cause. So it's going to go much farther than just literally people standing at the border and watching people cross the river. It's going to have an effect all around the state.
And some of this can be, people who have lived there forever for their whole lives, right? Maybe they've been there, 10, 20 years or whatever. It's not like they just crossed. And then what would the fallout be? What would that look like to them if this happened?
Representative David Spiller, who sponsored SB4, mm-hmm. he said that the intent of it was to prevent those who had crossed into Texas recently rather than going. Because a lot of people were thinking, well, what about my grandmother, mm-hmm. people who've been here for a long time? But again, he can say that.
But how do they know who just crossed?
But as far as how this law is going to be carried out.
Well, that's right. And of course, the law is pretty thorough on one thing. It requires that anyone who is arrested for this has to give all sorts of information into the databases, fingerprints, any sort of other information about them. And then if they're stopped later on, that database has to be checked. So a new officer, a police officer from Presidio, which is on the border, or from Amarillo up in the Panhandle, would stop someone, would have to check their names through the database. And if they found that Mr. Garcia, for example, had crossed without permission before, they can then arrest him because they've re-entered. So that database will be there regardless of what the officer has seen or not seen.
One of the things I struggle with on the immigration issue, the terminology surrounding it, and maybe you can help me with this, is we have Governor Abbott and others in the state, his political allies, talking about illegal entry and so on. And so many of the cases that we're dealing with, as you know, what we're seeing along the border is very different from what it was 20, 30, 40 years ago, where I think the primary issue, and I grew up in close to the border in the valley, you're primarily dealing with people coming, often maybe single men coming from Mexico looking for work, trying to cross into Texas without being detected. Now you have people primarily from other countries making long trips. It's often families, and they're turning themselves in and saying, I want to apply for asylum. And so I think the overwhelming number of cases that we're seeing fall into that category, but they are referred to as illegal entries. And if someone, the asylum process is a legal process. So, are people such as Governor Abbott mischaracterizing these cases?
Yeah, I think the language is meant to be provocative. In fact, it even affects the legal positions in the cases. Texas has taken the position that there's an invasion. And sure. therefore, under the Constitution, Texas has the right to take actions to stop an invasion. So they're describing immigration as an invasion. They're also saying that they're basically at war with immigrants who are coming over. Mm. And this is the position they've taken in court. A lot of it's used in the positions by state officials, but it's even used in court proceedings. They're saying that there's an invasion and that they're at war. And in fact, in this recent decision, Judge Ezra said, you cannot say this is an invasion. He goes back and describes what invasion means in the U.S. Constitution, what war means in the U.S. Constitution, say that's not what is happening here. Now, you're right about the changing structure of immigration. I mean, like those of us who've lived a long time in Texas have seen this change over time. We understand that. But all of it's being lumped together. And of course, what they're arguing, the state officials saying, we have to do this to stop drugs and the cartels. Mm-hmm. Well, there are probably some people who come across who are carrying drugs or involved in the cartels. But what I've heard, probably not much more than is in our natural population here. I mean, the fact is there are people in gangs and drugs have been in Texas forever. Mm-hmm. And to blame all of this on the immigrants is just politics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I wanted to, getting back to the practical implications of this, you're looking at people who may have crossed through Mexico, they might have come into Arizona or some other state. I guess I wonder how this is going to be enforced when you're talking about really having no proof as to if you don't see the person cross.
Well, most recently, the Fifth Circuit held an argument about this to see whether they should enter a stay or not.
Yeah.
And the attorney for the state had to often say, "We don't know how this is going to work. We'll have to let it happen and see what happens." And the judge asked this hypothetical of someone who had crossed in Arizona and come into Texas. So they might have crossed into the United States without going through the proper channels. And could you arrest them in Texas? And he wasn't really sure what could be done. And of course, people talk about people who crossed in from Canada, what would apply. But a lot of those like extreme situations, but the fact is they really don't know exactly how it's going
to
happen.
And does that also apply to people who maybe came between ports of entry, but said, I want to apply for asylum? And so again, getting back to our question about whether that constitutes an illegal entry or not, would that person, if they're saying, I've got an asylum claim and it's being processed, would they be subject to arrest under this?
Well, yes. In fact, the state was very clear to say that just because someone has a claim pending for asylum or for any one of – there are many visas you can get to come in even though you're, quote, undocumented, unquote. Even though you have a claim there, that's not to be considered by the state judge. Mm-hmm. So the state judge is specifically told that it is not a defense if you might be able to get asylum or you might be able to get a U or V visa of a someone who's been sex trafficked or someone who's a witness in a criminal proceeding. Mm-hmm. Those visas are allowed by the federal government. That's not a defense to the state claim.
So someone is going through a legal process, a federal legal process, and that's still it's not going to be good enough.
If they've already won it, in other words, if they already have gotten asylum or they already have the visa, that has to be respected. But if they're in the process, that does not. So basically, if someone comes in and say, "Well, I've just filed my papers for asylum," that is not enough to stop being deported by a state judge back to Mexico.
Wow. It's just ignoring the asylum.
That specifically, I mean, it was pretty bald. I mean, to be honest with you, when they put in the state law that's saying, you know, the fact that you might have a federal claim is not a defense. Now, they do say that if you've already gotten your federal, some sort of federal documentation, that has to be respected. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you have a claim or might file a claim that hasn't been ruled on is not a defense. And they specifically say that in the state law.
You know, I want to ask you about something that's connected to this Texas law in a way. I saw an interview with U.S. Border Patrol Chief Jason Owens, and he was talking about the issues on the border and saying that in his opinion we needed to reevaluate asylum law, mm-hmm. and limited, I guess, to people coming through what he called the front door, coming through ports of entry, mm-hmm. and that he felt that there were abuses of the asylum law. Again, that's we're really dealing with SB 4 here, but this federal asylum law in the United States is an issue that just keeps coming up whenever there's a political discussion about where we stand with yes. immigration. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not an immigration lawyer, so I have to be very right. careful. I think that I understand asylum law. I think that as I understand it, the agreement that was made in Congress on immigration was going to greatly modify asylum mm-hmm. law and, to be honest, make it much harder to get asylum. Change the standard of review by immigration judges on when they could grant asylum or not. So there was, as part of the negotiated settlement in Washington, you know, remember it was part of aid to Ukraine, aid to Israel, and immigration. Part of that was going to modify asylum law to make it actually much harder to get asylum. The fact is there's a lot of people with very valid asylum cases, and there's some people who don't have valid asylum. I'm not going to argue that everyone who's ever come across and claimed asylum is entitled to full asylum rights. But the law on that has developed over a long period of time. There's lots of law on what sort of asylum cases can be made, expert testimony. Literally, to get an asylum case, you have to have someone come in who's an expert on what sort of terrorism there is in El Salvador to see whether you have a claim or not, or Venezuela. Or Nicaragua, it's very hard to get a real asylum law.
And it seems like what's really changed in recent years, maybe the last decade or so, mm-hmm. is just the volume of cases that we're dealing with, which I think is really, we were able to process asylum cases reasonably well for a good period of mm-hmm. time. And we've just reached a point where there are just so many people coming and applying for asylum that it's, that's become the problem.
Well, there are many more people coming in. And part of that negotiated issue on immigration was to add a lot more immigration judges and a lot more immigration officials and a lot more persons working for the government to try to watch or to stop immigration, illegal immigration. So that was part of it, and that was not funded. So I think most people who are looking at this from the point of view, what can we do the most, what would be most helpful, would be to increase the number of judges, increase the number of officials, increase the number of Border Patrol agents, and let them try to enforce the law. Now, as I said, the settlement was going to even weaken the basic legal standards mm-hmm. for asylum, make it much harder to claim asylum. Mm-hmm. But so far, that hasn't become the law. So the people on the border are affected by this sort of strange and ambiguous set of circumstances.
Mm. What are they getting, the people on the border, what are they getting told? Like how are immigration lawyers trying to prepare them? I've heard a little bit about that, but what have you heard about what they're getting told to protect themselves?
I really haven't heard too much about it. I haven't talked to many immigration lawyers about it. Mm-hmm. I've talked to some students who are related to immigrants, and they're very scared. Mm-hmm. The immigration lawyers, though, have to prepare people. Mm-hmm. So I assume that they're saying, keep a very low profile, don't travel. If you must come across, try to make sure you claim asylum as quickly as possible and get a lawyer as quickly as possible. But mm-hmm. I think the effect is going to be very broad on all sorts of, you know, I don't think anyone can deny that there are numbers of undocumented people in the state of Texas, mm-hmm. and they're probably extremely scared. Even though, again, the state says this is just to stop people from coming across, in fact, it's going to affect all sorts of state and local enforcement of laws on people who look as though they might be undocumented. Right. So I think there's a lot of fright out there. Mm-hmm.
I saw something the other day about how, I think this might have been in 2022, that about 83% of the people coming through Mexico into Texas were actually from countries other than Mexico. And I mean, one fascinating component to this SB 4 debate has been the fact that Mexico has come out and said, you know, if a judge orders someone be deported to Mexico, we're not going to take those people.
Yes, in fact, they've even filed legal papers to that extent. The Mexican government has been involved in these cases for a long time, and they filed an amicus brief to mm-hmm. the Fifth Circuit saying just that. We are not going to accept these mm-hmm. people. You cannot tell people to come in our country unless they're Mexican nationals.
Yeah.
But remember, the way the law applies, if you came in from Mexico, but you're from Venezuela or Iraq or China, you're going to be sent back to Mexico. Mm-hmm. And so Mexico is not going to accept them. So you're really, these poor immigrants are going to be in literally in purgatory.
Yeah.
Because the state law says.
How's that going to play out, do you think?
Well, I certainly don't know. I think it's just going to be a mess is what it's going to be. I mean, that's a good legal term. It's going to be incredibly difficult. But the way as I understand the state law here says that if Judge X decides that someone came over, and they did it illegally, through the right stations, they can be given a chance to voluntarily go back to Mexico. But again, if they're not from Mexico, Mexico's not going to accept them. So literally the way the person argued it was that the state official, and by the way, a state DPS or local officer would have to be in charge of personally escorting this person back to the back to the port of entry. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the people on the Mexican side will say, who are you?
Yeah.
Well, I'm John Jones. Where are you from? I'm from Chile. And they're going to say, well, we're not going to let you in. You don't have proper documentation. So it's going to be a mess.
Well,
and the Mexican government understandably doesn't want to say that we will accept all people from all countries just because they happen to travel across the river in Mexico.
I imagine this is going to clog up the jails even more, right? And the law enforcement and get their attention off of enforcing the law in other ways that are absolutely needed. I mean, I imagine it's going to be a mess in that way too.
I think it certainly will be.
Yeah.
The border counties, some of them are pretty upfront, like El Paso joined the lawsuit because they saw the effect it was going to have on them. They're worried about the extra beds in their jails, the pressure on their local officials, the pressure on their local police officers. And I think all the counties along the border will be most affected by it. But you're right. It's a matter of, you know, how to use your resources. So if you have more of your local police going along the border looking for people, they're not going to be trying to stop murders, rapes, and robberies in their cities. So it's very strange situation. It's going to put a lot of pressure on all levels of government.
Mm-hmm.
Since we had the Supreme Court decision on SB 1070, which was 12 years ago, we've had some changes in the Supreme Court. Donald Trump, who's been an extreme hawk on immigration and the border, as he had stated, three Supreme Court justices during his term in office. Mm-hmm. Do you have any? Again, we saw how the court handled SB 1070. Do you have confidence that we will see a similar decision when it comes to SB 4? Or what are your thoughts?
Well, of course, lawyers have to be careful about predicting what the Supreme Court's going to do. I think that it's so clear that Texas law violates preemption doctrines that the Supreme Court will strike it down. Because it clearly does. It violates not only U.S. versus Arizona, but the fundamental concepts of how federal and state governments work together. And it violates that. And so you can count your justices as you wish. On the recent opinion that came down last week, three of the justices said that this law violates the preemption doctrine. Mm-hmm. Two of the justices, well, we don't know yet, but it looks pretty serious. Judge Roberts, by the way, who's one of the judges in the majority in the U.S. v. Arizona case, he decided the Arizona case was preempted. The Arizona law was preempted, didn't say anything. So we don't know exactly how they're going to find. But I think if they read U.S. versus Arizona, not just the sort of the way that the state of Texas describes it, but they read the case the way it's written, I think they're going to see that the state law does violate those concepts. And, you know, again, the government of Mexico is involved in this. International relations. Mm-hmm. One of the issues always brought up here is that this is the United States dealing with a foreign country, and we have very sensitive relations with the foreign country. And that's one thing that the United States brought up in the Arizona case, saying, look, you know, we didn't do certain things because we felt that it would interfere with our relationships with other countries. That's one reason why the federal law penalizes employers who hire undocumented, but not the undocumented who are trying to get a job. Because the undocumented trying to get a job are often nationals of other countries the United States is dealing with. And all of these countries, no matter what the country, I mentioned Mexico, but there's Chile and Iraq and China. Mm-hmm. All of these countries are still concerned about their nationals and don't want them to be disrespected. And the fact that you could have each state with its own immigration law just doesn't make any sense. Again, what will the government of any country? I mean, let's do England. It's easy not to mention England. Let's talk about England. England has people who come over and violate the law, come over without documentation. And even they would be concerned if their nationals were treated badly by different states in different ways. Mm-hmm. They would like to be able to call up the ambassador, the U.S. ambassador in London, and say, what the hell are you doing to our people? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's certainly going to happen in countries all around the world. So it just doesn't make sense that each state gets to set its own immigration law.
Absolutely. Last week, I saw a virtual press conference which featured some Democratic state representatives from different states, and one of them was Trey Martinez Fisher from Texas, he's San Antonio, and he mentioned something that I thought was interesting, where he said that on the floor of the Texas House, he was talking about SB4, but I think he was using that as one example of something that he's seen happen over the years, which is that he said he's had conversations with his Republican colleagues and will say to them, you know, you can pass these laws. And he's thinking about some of these controversial mm-hmm. laws we've had in Texas in recent years. You can pass these laws, but, you know, that doesn't mean they're going to be implemented. You got to go through the court system. We've got to go through all the stuff. And he suggested he was trying to kind of make them think about the fact that, you know, you can, there are going to be implications down the line and that maybe you ought to be thinking about the legal implications before you push to get these things passed. And I just wonder if you have thoughts, because again, this is one of the most controversial laws mm-hmm. Texas has passed in recent years, and one that's gotten a lot of national attention, but it's hardly the only one.
Mm-hmm. And, it's not the only one, and states have their own politics and their own interest. And challenging federal law is a fairly popular mm-hmm. Issue in a lot of states. And indeed, you think about the set of abortion cases, the states that basically, the state law in Texas and the other states violated what was the Supreme Court's position on the mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. But then when it came back up, they won. Mm-hmm. So to some extent, states have been, I think, encouraged to challenge some of the existing Supreme Court precedent. And by the way, I mean, I've been around a long time and studied these things. That's what happened in Brown v. Board of Education. People challenged the status quo and brought up cases that under the old law would have lost, but they did it to challenge it. So I expect that to continue. In this case, I know that state officials were very aware of U.S. versus Arizona. I actually watched a short hearing that occurred in the Senate on the last bill, and the two speakers both said, this violates U.S. versus Arizona. You cannot distinguish it. And the good people on the Senate committee said, thank you for your input, and then passed it 7-2. Mm-hmm. So, but I think they're aware of that. I think the Supreme Court ultimately is just not going to be able to approve this sort of provision.
I think, you know, politically, most Texans would approve of this, right? I mean, I think they're excited about it. I imagine people who vote for Governor Abbott and his Operation Lone Star, and they're just like, yeah, like, you know, they're upset, you know, they want to close the border, right? They say it's open, which it's not open, but they say it is, and they see this is the answer. On that side of things, do you think, like, if it plays out the way they want it, would it keep the border? Would it maybe get it to a more secure area?
I don't think so. I think it will result in more people being arrested and hassled. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure how many fewer people actually want to cross mm-hmm. because of mm-hmm. The issues that bring people here. I mean, you know, people seek asylum, but there are also people who are seeking jobs and families.
Right.
And I just don't think it's going to have that much of an effect. I do think they'll try. And I mean, you've heard the old argument, the higher the fence, the higher the ladder. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, Texas has already spent a lot of money and a lot of effort on this. And if you've seen those container trucks along the border in Eagle Pass, I mean, that's become like ground zero. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that the people who want to come here can find some other way. It's a long border. I think it's 1,250 miles of Texas-Mexico border.
Yeah.
There's other places to cross, other ways to come in. The long-term situation is going to have to be a broader sort of enforcement, more involvement with these countries' economies, the countries who are sending people here, continuing education of immigrants before they get here. It's going to be a long-term fight. But having each state have its own law of arrest, especially a state like Texas that is, what is it now, 40% Latino, and going to have, and in some places, the Latinos are still without political power. It's going to create a lot of harassment of those people, and that's a real concern.
I think we're going to wrap things up there. Al Kaufman, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's an important matter to discuss. I'm glad you all are coming. By the way, Plazov, you've done a lot of good coverage on this at the Express News, articles and op-eds and editorials. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. And for everyone listening, hope you're doing well, and we'll be back with you next week. Take care.